Welcome back to Forecasting Innovation, a podcast by Humidsat with Chief Scientist Paolo Ruti and myself, Christina Bonanati, Earth Scientist and Science Communicator. Humidsat is Europe's operational satellite agency for monitoring weather, climate and the environment from space. Let's explore the frontiers of technology in satellite operations and weather science. For our next two episodes of Forecasting Innovation, Humidsat's Chief Scientist Paolo Ruti has invited experts to share their perspective of Europe's first sounding satellite in geostationary orbit. The Meteosat third generation sounder MTGS-1 that will be launched this summer and will host also the new Copernicus Sentinel-4 atmospheric monitoring mission. Today, we would like to welcome Marianne Thuring. She is Director General at the Danish Meteorological Institute since 2013.
At least in Copenhagen, it sounds good.
Okay. So Paolo, I hope you had a good day.
Yeah, for sure. To speak with Marianne is
yeah.
For the launch of a new satellite like the Meteosat third generation sounder, a series of carefully planned steps is followed by Humidsat as the operator and the National Meteorological and Hydrological Services, who are the final data users. It is a long timeline that brings to the final phase a long-term investment of Humidsat and the member states, ready for the launch and a decade of operations in front of us. We are now at an exciting moment as MTGS-1 will be launched this summer, so we are excited to hear from both of you your perspectives, what it took and still takes to get the most out of this unprecedented technical innovation. Also, considering the special time of emerging AI, new supercomputers expanding cloud infrastructure, and from the user perspective, the growing urgency to forecast severe weather in a warming climate. So Paolo, to begin, could you give an overview of the MTGS-1 satellite system at the upcoming launch? It would be interesting to hear how long it actually took to plan, design and build such a satellite system. What is the role of Humidsat, the partner organizations? And then we would like to hear how is the National Weather Service like the Danish Meteorological Institute involved in such a process?
So first of all, what is in the satellite? So the satellite, the Meteosat third generation sounder, is the first European satellite hosting both a mission funded by Humidsat member state, which is capable to slice the atmosphere, to go through the atmosphere, to look at temperature and humidity profile, which are extremely important for detecting and predicting extreme weather events. And another mission, which is funded by Copernicus, which is the Sentinel-4 ultraviolet visible and near infrared sounder, which is dedicated to chemistry of the atmosphere, to important chemical compounds in the atmosphere that are relevant for the health or for the capacity to predict also the chemistry cycle in the atmosphere. And in the end, you have a lot of applications such as air quality as an example. But this will happen very soon. So in summer, there will be the launch and it will be probably beginning of July 2025. As soon as it will become operational, Meteosat third generation sounder will be called Meteosat 13, as we have already operationalized the imager, which is our new Meteosat 12. The lifetime of the satellite will be nominally around 8-9 years. However, we know that if we are very clever during the operations, the lifetime can be much longer because the lifetime is determined by many different parameters. But one critical parameter is the fuel. The fuel is which we have on the satellite. If we have a very good use of the fuel, especially in the first phase when you position the satellite into the last orbit, then the lifetime can be longer. Nowadays, we have up to 20 years.
So if you're looking at the whole timeline of the satellite, when did you actually start at Humidsat to develop this and what is involved in this process?
So the development of a satellite of such a complexity as the Meteosat third generation starts, first of all, from the user requirement, which is a cycle where you start first looking to the what is really needed in terms of different application areas. So you need to understand what is used and what are the area where you want this data to be used for? Because otherwise, it's not just a scientific endeavor. Is a mission to become operational. So it needs to be used into weather prediction. It needs to be used in saving life, saving goods. It needs to be used to monitor hydrology, or it needs to be used to detect storms since they start developing and they become dangerous. To do so, you need to start from the beginning, from the application side, from the last mile, basically. And that brings you to see the problem from the end. And that takes quite a while, takes maybe 10, 15 years, depending even more, to come and to have a final program completed as Meteosat third generation. The preparation of such a mission, which is complex and is starting from defining the requirements, what is really needed. And you need to guess this many years in advance. And this is where there's the first interaction with the main users, who are the Met services around Europe. And one of them is Denmark, for sure. And we have here Marianne, and she can bring this perspective. So I think that the first important question is, in the initial phase, how are the governments like Denmark involved in this decision-making process around a major satellite program like the Meteosat third generation? And what is needed to secure funding and support? So what kind of arguments, economic, societal, are most relevant to bring to the table to make this decision? I think that is for you, Marianne.
Well, first of all, I would like to explain that DMI is probably, like other countries, the National Met Services, the sort of holding the membership of EUMETSAT on behalf of our countries. So, I mean, DMI is holding the membership of and taking responsibility of the membership of EUMETSAT on behalf of the Kingdom of Denmark. And why do I mention that? It means that this is a sort of very serious membership of an European infrastructure, which continuously operates under a mandate from the Danish government. It operates under the mandate for a general budget. And I could mention in sort of kind of parentheses that the membership of EUMETSAT is the most expensive membership we have at all, amongst all the different memberships we have in the European meteorological infrastructure and WMO and everything. So, of course, the government and the parliament is paying attention to what we do. So we have a general budget, which is repeated on the annual budget. But when new satellite programs are proposed, such as, for instance, the MTG, we are expected to prepare a thorough case, in fact, including technical, scientific, and socioeconomic analysis to justify this investment. Why does the community do what we want to do? And this assessment will be done on behalf of us, again, on behalf of the kingdom, but on behalf and on the responsibility of DMI. We will evaluate the relevance and benefits for the particular program we are talking about, in this case, the MTG, for Denmark. Socioeconomic analysis is very important to make, to show both the societal and the economic value of the improved services, which we will explain, of course, what is the benefit of the whole investment. And in case the investment is bigger, which is often the case with satellites, than our normal budget, we will have to bring the request to the relevant committee in the parliament and ask for approval. So it's, in fact, as you can hear from what I explained, it is quite a comprehensive and thorough process we go through. And I would like to mention, in fact, that I don't see any sort of silver bullet to be invented. That at least I've learned the last years. There's no particular silver bullet which can always trigger the budget for what we want to do. Not that the political system don't have trust in us. I do think they have. But of course, we are in competition with a lot of other wishes for expenditures when it comes to stately budgets. So we have to be politically clever when we ask for new budget or additional budget to talk about what are the improved weather forecasts? How could we improve our warnings for situations with severe weather situations? How can we probably improve climate monitoring, which is something of political interest these years, of course? And it could be also air quality monitoring. But to justify what is going to take place, we are responsible to do that. So I think it's a really thorough process, and we are really working hard, even though it seems when you are in council meetings and committee meetings in UMITSAT, it seems obvious that we are going to have this improvement of the services. We are in strong competition with other fantastic ideas about how to spend the public budget. So we are working hard every time it is needed.
This is very interesting. And you were basically talking about Denmark and about this perspective. However, I mean, you were touching a bit on things like climate monitoring as well. So Denmark has also a big role or responsibility in terms of supporting, for example, African countries or mitigating climate risks and helping to achieve sustainable development goals. How much does this play a role in terms of pursuing?
I mean, climate policy in general, global climate policy is something which is playing an important role for Danish government. It's been playing an important role for many years. I always feel when sort of talking about these issues with the government and my own minister and ministry, there is a strong commitment for international partnerships, for trying to see how Danish competences and possibilities could be used, for instance, also in African countries and other countries where they're probably less developed than we are. We have established partnerships with the Meteorological Institute in Ghana and a national sort of sector collaboration agreement. And we're also part of the UNWMO set up in SOF facility, and we are working in Tanzania in that respect. So basically, I think the general sort of attitude is that we find it sort of positive, and it's a positive reaction by the politicians when we explain that the investment in, for instance, MTG will also have, if we use the data the right way, will also have a very positive implication for the possibility of early warnings for hazardous weather and climate adaptation in the parts of the world where it's most difficult to get this relevant information. So I always find that as a positive add-on.
It is not just building a satellite and launching it. It is a complex machinery. As in an hospital, you could have top-notch instrument capable to detect diseases, but if you are not ready to use it, if you don't have the technicians that are prepared to work on those, it will be a loss of investment. So the readiness is the critical word here. And having a user readiness campaign is extremely important for UMITSAT. And this is why UMITSAT provides national weather services where simulated proxy data that they simulate, so data that are basically as similar as possible to the real data that they will get from the geostationary satellite. So this is what we do. And I think this is where DMI and Mariane is coming, and they use this data provided by EUMETSAT to understand how those data will figure out into their operational processing system. I think that is where probably Mariane, you can give us a bit more of details.
Well, I can tell you for sure, to prepare DMI to receive the new data from the new sounders, it is really a huge task. It is very, very difficult. It's very complex. And it takes a lot of resources on our side. I think the scientists and the IT people and the meteorologists in weather and warnings, in our department for weather and warnings, they find this really, really interesting, but also very, very complex. So we are, first of all, and we've been working on this for quite a while now. We are working hard to build up the infrastructure needed to receive the new MTG satellite data and to handle the very large amounts of data which will come to us. That's something we have to deal with as well. Or we are already, in fact, downloading data from the first MTG satellite, the imager. So we are preparing ourselves to be ready. And in fact, you might know that we are working together in United Weather Centers West, the community which has, we are four countries together having a common supercomputer. So under the leadership of Mid-Iron, we are Iceland, the Netherlands and us, we are in fact together preparing how to receive the sounder data. And I think that's a good and strong way of doing it as well. So it doesn't mean that everyone has to boil up one's own solution. I would also like to mention in this respect that we are working hard, in fact, to understand the data, to understand how to use the new data in our operational setup. One thing is to receive the data. That's nice. That's a good beginning. But we also have to understand how to use it. And I think the synthetic data, which is coming already, that's essential for us in order to train and to see how we can improve our products and services. But it's a long journey, and it doesn't get up running from one day to another. And it's also, I have to mention again, an expensive journey, because we have to use quite a lot of resources at home. Probably the last thing I would like to mention in this respect is the collaboration with EUMETSAT. It is really good with the user consultations. It's really good to have close collaboration with EUMETSAT and the scientists and technicians in EUMETSAT, which we appreciate very much. And I think that also makes our implementation easier and hopefully even more clever than what we could boil up ourselves. But it is a huge task.
The amount of data that now you will receive, it's of course growing. So the Meteosat third generation compared to the Meteosat second generation will have an order of magnitude of data that will be retrieved, downlinked from the satellite and distributed to Met services and all to all users. So it is expected that to retrieve a cumulative 1,000 terabytes in the first year of operations, up to a cumulative of accumulation of 20,000 terabytes by end of his fifth year in operation. So this gives you a bit the landscape of the amount of data. And this is where I think it's important to understand the critical issue on how to make sure that this data is used. And one area where there's certainly interest to further exploit this large amount of data is the fact that machine learning AI is basically exploiting those data nowadays in a way that is unprecedented. And this is what we discussed also with Florence Rabier in the previous podcast. So on one side, we have this huge amount of data. And on the other side, we have new technologies coming like AI machine learning, which will bring even more capacity to digest and to make the most out of those data. The other aspects that are important ingredients in this recipe is the use of supercomputers. And as one example, and Marianne, she can confirm, in Denmark was launched last year a new supercomputer on Gefion, which could play a role on this next generation AI weather forecasting models. And a third important ingredient is also the cloud infrastructure that we are building. So in EUMETSAT, together with our member states and with ECMWF, we are working on the European Weather Cloud, where there's a capacity to facilitate the uptake of these new technologies and the exploitation of the data. Or under Copernicus, there's Wikio, also with the possibility to further exploit Copernicus data. So the cloud infrastructure is important, not only as a technology, but is also important because it makes probably bringing together and making working together institutions and countries that they are far apart, but they can use in this virtual world, they can come easily together. I think this is one important framework. And what do these developments of AI and cloud infrastructure mean for the utilization of satellite data in the next 10 years or more years? Will they be better exploited? I think this is a critical question for an active country as Denmark.
Yeah, Paolo, I fully agree with you. I mean, worst case scenario would be that we are able to receive all this data. We have the antennas, we have, for instance, on the building where we are, DMI is located on our roof. We have the antennas to receive all the data, and we could distribute all the data. But if there's no societal benefit, it's a failure. So seen from our point of view, the ultimate goal is better weather forecasting, warnings and climate information to public and decision makers, which is improving. And then, of course, the question is, but how do we get there? I'm fully in line with those people who believe that the new scientific line to take is to develop within the context of machine learning and AI. And by the way, I understand, even though I'm not a scientist myself, I do understand that being able to scientifically to handle the huge amount of data which the new satellite will give us, as new sounders will give us, the only relevant way probably to use this is by understanding better how ML and AI models can support the services we do today. And that's why we have a very, very close collaboration between our scientists and the people, the meteorologists in operation. We have, of course, always had that close collaboration, also in the good old days where we only knew about NWP. But now it seems to me that the need for closer collaboration is even bigger than ever, because the development is so fast and the possibilities are so many. If we want to pick and choose really good ways and really robust ways of improving our operations, we have to make sure that they do that, because they're all very curious people, clever people, they are competent people, they're skilled people. So they really want to understand how this can all be in favor of the services we do. I would also like to mention that in this storytelling, we also have to bear in mind that we have to be very close, or in this collaboration, I'm talking about internally, for instance, at DMI, could probably be in any other institute as well. But adding the data scientists, adding the IT people, it has always been, of course, necessary. But the necessity of getting other scientific angles into how to cope with the new data and the AI models and how to make it fit into the NWP production as well. That's really needed, that we have a triangle of scientists, metrologists, and IT or data scientists. You mentioned, Paolo, a pilot project with a huge supercomputer in Denmark, Gefion. And that's at least one lesson learned, that it's also a lot about how to use the new techniques, how to use a new supercomputer, how to use the GPUs, how to code, how to make a proper code, which is really fit for what it should deliver. So I think this, if I allow me to repeat myself by saying that the triangle between scientists, the data scientists and IT people, and the metrologists, the user, that triangle seems to be really, really important. And I think that's one of the answers to the question posed. How will we make use of all these new data? This is the way we will try to do it. But I also have to mention that we are not the ones who can get all the answers to the complex questions. Our European collaboration in the field of developing ML, AI, and how to make that fit into what we know from NWP, that collaboration is really important when you also add the complexity of a lot of new data. It's a challenge, but it's also an opportunity, a huge opportunity, if we do it the right way.
I think you really touched critical point, is how the way we are working together in a Met service or in a more complex organization need to change. As the typical, let's say, sequential value chain that we had before, where you have a very, expert of a specific part of the physics of the model, and then they are, let's say, custodian of that knowledge, which times to times is extremely complex. When you speak about convection or turbulence, it could be very, very complex. And then you have how this, of course, is getting the data, and that is elaborated through a very complex physical coding, try to represent in a sort of virtual lab what's happening in the real world. Nowadays, this AI is generating also shortcuts between people and between different profiles. And I think this is also an interesting element that you brought, how IT or data scientists, they need to work together with the operational people, forecasters, and the role of meteorologists can go towards interpretation. How do you interpret all this type of what an AI model will produce? So this is one area. The other one is probably the cloud. The cloud will make us make possible to generate an instance, a virtual instance or a virtual machine that works in Denmark, but works also in Greece.
Mm. Yes.
If the different communities coming together as it did in the last time. Which brings us to the operational aspect. What are the critical phases during and after the launch? You have the launch, you have the rocket, you have at certain point the release of the satellite, and the satellite usually is in intermediate orbit around the Earth. So you have to, first of all, the first moment there is a separation from the launch vehicle, you have to establish the communication with the satellite, you have to check everything works well, you have to check all the telemetry, so all the parameters that are telling you the status, how healthy is your satellite. And then you have to prepare the satellite to move to another orbit, because to reach the final orbit, which is the geostationary one, 36,000 kilometers far away, looking in a special orbit that rotates at the same angular velocity as the Earth, you have to do another jump to another orbit. So you have to use the fuel, which as mentioned at the beginning, and the smarter you are, the better and the longer the life of the satellite will be. And then there is a commissioning phase where technicians, scientists, they start working on receiving the first data, understanding if everything is okay. And of course, these data need a lot of work and care to become operational. And this is the commissioning phase where you have to validate, calibrate, the instrument, you have to make sure that the final product is really what the user they need. And how Emmet Service like DMI is involved in this process of the satellite becoming operational? So how do you, in a concrete way, you see this from a Emmet Service perspective?
Well, of course, it's quite a technical question you ask me, Paolo, but I have a few comments I can give you. I mean, we are following the development of the MTG, the whole setup. We are following that very curiously, and we are really hopeful. I mean, we have invested ourselves, as I explained before, really a lot of resources in being ready to receive the new data. We are also investing a lot in making our metrologists ready to use the new data. The scientists are really hopeful. They are looking forward to get the new data. So I think the general feeling we have is that with the sort of removed barriers, we are in a position where everyone, also those who might not have so many supercomputers and antennas and whatnot, they will be able to receive and use satellite data from what we are able to deliver, and also thereby to make it possible for a more sort of global use of weather data, which we consider really important when you take the impacts of climate change into consideration. I touched base with this a little bit earlier in our conversation when you asked me the question about what is our take on the situation in Africa. And this is part of it. I think together, AI and cloud computing will basically allow for more detailed and accurate weather applications in our own country, of course, in Europe, but also in other places. And exactly how to make this work from sort of a very technical point of view, I'm not the right person to question on that question. But I do believe that we have experts at DMI who are, together with other countries' experts, dealing with how we can make the best use of the new data when it is getting sort of real for real, when the launch has taken place. And I also have to say that I'm afraid that we will have to spend some time going forward to see the real benefits. We don't have all the benefits on the first Monday after the launch. It's a process. Like we talked about before, if we want to benefit from this investment, we will really have to work differently from what we have done. Basically, because we have to operate more in-depth machine learning and AI to get benefit out of all the data and so much data. And that's the only way to do it. And that demands a lot of change management in each institute. We have to introduce changes to our NWP society, which to some people is quite unknown. To other people, it's difficult to believe that there are other solutions than the ones they know best. And how to make these worlds work well together, because none of them can live on their own at the moment. So my answer, Paolo, you can hear, is really long. And it's full of imaginations from different parts of the implementation chain. And I think that's how it is.
This is the first mission together with another operational mission from Chinese, but otherwise is the first mission, especially in Europe, providing from a geostationary platform profiles of temperature and humidity every 30 minutes over Europe and Africa from a geostationary satellite, which gives you the possibility to have this high-frequency information. And this is really the important novelty, because the atmosphere, it's very critical to have this information on the profile of temperature, humidity, because those are the parameters that gives you information on the risk to have very explosive extreme storms or development of strong precipitation events that could be very impactful in certain parts of Europe or Africa. I think this is the important novelty. Then there is the Sentinel-4, which is a combined satellite under Copernicus. So in both cases, so both for the infrared sounder and for the Sentinel-4, the European Space Agency plays an important role to build the instruments, which is then operated by EUMETSAT. The Sentinel-4 under the European Commission Copernicus umbrella provides you ultraviolet, visible and near-infrared information, gives you information on a lot of chemical compounds in the atmosphere. And I think this is the important novelty for these satellites. But the critical question is, at the end of the story, is how this data will be used and what are the key benefits we can expect from the new Meteosat infrared sounder for Europe and for a country as Denmark. So I think that is another crucial question, and I'm sure, Marianne, you have a good answer to this.
Yeah, thank you very much, Paolo. I think the sort of bottom line in this whole exercise, the bottom line is that we really wish and really believe that by using this new high frequency sort of profiles on humidity and temperature, which we do not have today, we will be able to detect early storm signals and also rapid weather developments in general. And I think in a world where we do see growing number of extreme weather events, it will be really important for us to improve our services, to improve our warning system and warning strategies, because we will be able to, that's my expectation and my ambition. I'm not me personally, but the ambition of DMI, of course, it is to bring us in a position where we really are now in a position where we can improve some of the, we call it services or forecasts, which we are delivering today, because we will get a new set of data, which is not part of our background today, our basis today for what we do. And I also have to say that the reason why I'm optimistic on this is because we have seen now that the ML work we are doing and the AI models we are dealing with and exercising, they are showing really, really good results, really good results. They could be improved and they will be improved in the extremes, but it's not bad. And we have not been working on this very long time, I have to say. So I do believe that with new knowledge coming from the scientific part, new data possibilities, new technology, and curious people, practitioners, we will be able to deliver what on our ambition, which is to be able to deliver better forecasts, especially in the extreme weather situations for our citizens, European citizens in general.
I mean, this question of the ambition and also the role Europe has to play as a whole. And I think this meteorological community has a lot to teach how to play a role at European scale, but also internationally. And how do you see the role for the climate and the role globally, internationally, speaking about climate and climate change and the value of the investment that this community is making, a huge effort to invest money across several countries for sending those satellites in orbit? And I think there is a very high value for Denmark, the first question, but also for Europe on keeping this focus on climate and climate change through this data.
Sure. And I think we have two things we should show the whole world. At least two things. We have two important ingredients in order to deliver results. And we've shown that before in Europe that we are able to deliver. First of all, data has to be open. Those who are interested should be able to get data. That's important. That's a raw material for any improvement. So data, it's sharing data openly. And I mean, that has been a European policy for many years now. And I think we have done well by doing that. Secondly, our collaboration, scientific, operationally, and now also beginning the technical collaboration. You could take United Weather Center's collaboration on supercomputer facilities is an example. Because none of us are able to do very much on our own. Definitely not. At least not those of us who are small countries, and there's quite a lot of small countries in Europe. But we can do together a lot of development, and we can improve a lot, and we can find the right competences, not only in our own countries, but together if we are willing to collaborate. And I think that really makes Europe a showcase in this world, that we are able to find ways to collaborate and thereby get the benefits, for instance, out of an investment like MTG. And I think we have an obligation to do that. We have an obligation to do that because we are able to do it. So we should continue the way we have always done it. Sometimes it's a bit complicated because it's also hit by a bit of competition and things like that. But we should be able to survive by trusting each other and trusting that we have done it before. In different consortia, we improved the NWP, and we are doing well in NWP. And we can do it again now in ML and AI in Europe if we like to. And this new whole lot of MTG data would, for instance, bring us in a position where we can succeed, I believe, in delivering on the ambitions we have.
Thanks, Marianne.
It's been a pleasure.
Yes, thank you, Marianne.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
So many thanks to Marianne Thuring, director of the Danish Meteorological Institute. In the next podcast, we will welcome Nadia Fauré from the French National Center for Meteorological Research and speak with her about the assimilation of the new MTGS1 data into the weather prediction models. But Paolo, now I have one final question for you. I mean, in the context of science innovation, looking ahead, what do you see as the key lessons or challenges in turning scientific innovations like the Meteosat third generation into a real societal impact? And what excites you most about the next phase of satellite-based weather prediction?
That's a very, very, very important question, a very difficult time. Not sure I can really answer this. I think that the innovation is a buzzword. I think what is really important here is, will it make a difference for the users? Will it make a difference for detecting a very dramatic storms that can actually have a flooding in a certain area of Europe? Could be Western Germany, could be Northern Italy, Southern France. That is really where I expect that you connect innovation of the technology, of the instrument, innovation of what the instrument gives you with what is needed. And this is, to me, the critical challenge. And what I see as the way to exploit further in the near future, I think we will have a lot of good science developed by meteorological services in Europe and by universities. I think the use of this data on one side to better understand how weather extremes they work, and on the other, how to improve the prediction, is really the area where I see the relevance of this data. It could be traditional numerical weather prediction, it could be AI machine learning. I think this is still open to see where it will have a much more effect. So we keep open this question because we see in the future podcast what could be a further answer.